I usually have great anticipation as I start a new series, and today is the start of a new series. It's one I've looked to actually for years to talk about. I enjoy characters in the Bible. I enjoy all you characters too, but especially the biblical ones. And so I'm excited to share with you the story of Joseph of Egypt over these next number of weeks. I wrote something for our webpage. You could go to our webpage actually right now and see it. I thought I would just read it directly. It's some words I put together as I thought about this sermon series. The story of Joseph of Egypt. It's a story of vision of the future and a wonderful example of God's provision and grace. It's a story filled with parallels with the New Testament gospel account as it deals with despair, redemption, and deliverance. It's a story played out thousands of years ago and better written than any Hollywood or Broadway script. It's filled with numerous roller coaster high and lows, fear, anger, jealousy, success, treachery, grief, loneliness, all kinds of emotion. As we see some of the frustrating pain felt by a family as they are tragically divided by deception and scheming. Through the entire journey, we see God intimately involved with every aspect. It's a story filled with contrast, from a life of privilege to life in the pits, a life of desperate panic to a life filled with faithful service, a life of unfounded accusation leading to a life of incredible power and position, a life of disaster to a life of hope and deliverance, a death of a son to a surprise reunion of grand proportion, a severe famine and impending doom to the deliverance and the provision of God's chosen people. This is a story of Joseph of Egypt. It's only fitting that we consider the background leading up to this story. Many of you have read through the Bible, you know the stories. And this is one of those famous ones due to the significance of it. And I might add, to the parallels in the New Testament, especially the life of Christ. Not that I'm equating Joseph to the life of Christ, but the parallels are uncanny and you can't help but see it. So, let's take a look at some of the family background to Joseph. As we look, we'll find dysfunction and deception wreaking havoc over these people. Actually, when we consider going back a little farther with the first family of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, there's a family that had some tragedy where evil reigned through jealousy and murder. No doubt about it, dysfunction and dissension were part of the fabric of the family of Joseph. And the family of God's chosen people through their father Abraham, through the father Isaac, and the father Jacob. Abraham, Joseph's great-grandfather, not too far removed, he was made a promise by God himself. God himself came down and told Abraham a holy promise, a covenant, if you will. We're a covenant church, and we celebrate that promise God's given all of us. Well, Abraham himself was given a promise in Genesis chapter 12. Let me read it as it is written. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you." How'd you like to be told that? All the families on earth will be blessed through you. Abraham was blessed by God because he was faithful. He was obedient to the principles, to the truth of God. He followed him faithfully. despite many missteps and failings of God's chosen people, God was still faithful to them. Even though Abraham and his descendants would come up short, God remained faithful to them despite their sins. Abraham's son Isaac, who was the father of Jacob, who was the father of Joseph. It's a fairly short family tree from Abraham at that point. And there's countless stories throughout the Old Testament as it talks about the family tree of Abraham, as it talks about their mistakes, their struggles. You see, Joseph's family tree was documented for everybody to see. All the hurts and pains were documented for the world to know. You could say it's a sad history, but it is a history of not only Joseph's family, it's a history of mankind too. We could say it's the story of our family tree. So it's an observation we shouldn't just glance by. You need to know. If we were to document your family history and pass it out to everybody, wouldn't we be fascinated by all the exciting points of our family tree? Some of it we wouldn't want people to know about, but it'd be there. I remember when I came upon the truth my mother told me, I forget how old I was, that her parents had been divorced. At the time, divorce was a big no-no. And I went, my grandparents were divorced. Actually, my mom barely knew her father. She lived in Switzerland for 2 years, learned to speak French, and lost the ability to speak English. Now she can't remember any French except French fries or French toast or something. No, as we look at this family tree, as we consider ourselves, I think it's important we note that we don't picture ourselves above the struggles that this family worked through, the struggles that were present in this family tree. So looking at Joseph specifically, he's first mentioned at his birth, and birth is a season in this church, in Genesis 30. Jacob was one who had many wives and many children, but he deeply loved Joseph because he deeply loved Joseph's mother, Rachel. That story is quite a story in the Bible all on its own. After many years of not having a child, as we've seen in other parts of the Bible, Rachel bore a son, the first of two children. She experienced the shame of being barren, as we've seen in Old Testament culture, how important that was for a woman to have a child. I can't imagine what a delight it was to give birth to Joseph. In that day, it would have been a huge delight. God had not forgotten her. From Genesis 30, 22 through 24, we see it documented, then God remembered Rachel's plight and answered her prayers by enabling her to have children. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son. God has removed my disgrace, she said. And she named him Joseph, for she said, may the Lord add yet another son to my family. Which, of course, the Lord does through Benjamin later on. No, to Jacob, Joseph was the most precious son of all. And he didn't hide that fact. With all those brothers, with all the other family members, Jacob wanted everybody to know that Joseph would be the special son of all. All of Joseph's half-brothers knew this very, very well. They knew what Jacob felt of Joseph, and they knew what he felt of them as they come into our story. So we pick up the story in chapter 37, where we're going to take a closer look. The year is approximately 1875 BC. That's almost 2,000 years before Jesus Christ was to come and be born as a child. So Genesis 37, 1 through 3. So Jacob settled again in the land of Canaan, where his father had lived as a foreigner. Found that interesting. A foreigner there. He'd been there quite a while. This is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often tended to his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers, understand. He's a youngster compared to his brothers. His older brothers are much older than him in a lot of ways. So he worked for them, the sons of his father's wife, Phila and Silpa. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things his brothers were doing. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of the other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph, a beautiful robe, which is famous. We'll talk about that in just a second. Did you notice in verse 2, Joseph reported to his father all the bad things his brothers were doing? You know, I don't think it was tattletaling as much as just having daily discussions. You see, the brothers had a history of being ruthless. They were a murderous bunch. Jacob had good reasons to be worried about his sons. You might notice as we go into the names of Joseph's brothers, they will kind of sound familiar, some of them. If you study the Bible very much, you know the 12 tribes of Israel come from this brothers, the sons of Jacob. And so those names all come back to these people that were born in this day. I suspect Joseph was just a very normal 17-year-old kid. Innocent, honest, and a bit naive. Okay, I thought about this. I thought about our church. Tanner, how old are you? 16. So you're almost there. When's your birthday?
May.
Trying to think if we're in this story still. He'll be older by the time we get there. But Tanner, so he's kind of like Tanner. I thought of having Tanner come up just so we could visualize Joseph, but we won't. You don't have to. You can stay there. He's thankful, I can tell. So, the history. We talked about the family history of Jacob. But his sons were even more colorful than we see, especially as a group. These sons got together and they were scheming. They were deceptive. They were revengeful. They were actually felons as a group. They were dangerous hombres. And it's important to point out, because as we go into the story of Joseph, we need to understand what is surrounding Joseph, what he grew up in. These brothers were cruel, and they were conniving. So before we go on to the next verse, so I want to read or talk about a little bit about the coat. This coat that is famous, this coat that actually gave birth to a Broadway play, Joseph in the Multicolored Coat. Is that what it's called? I think so, yeah. What's that? The Amazing, yeah, one Amazing Technicolor Coat I saw one place. Yeah, it was quite a coat. It would have been long. The sleeves would have been very long and very big. It'd be unusual for a commoner to wear it. It was something royalty would wear. You wouldn't have a coat that was of that style. There might have been stones on it depicting how special this guy was, how special this coat was, and what it represented. I remember when I was about your age, Tanner, maybe even a year. No, I've been right about your age now. I got a new ski coat. Wow, this thing was chrome. No one had a chrome ski coat at the time. I felt so cool in that coat. I walked around. Kind of made me wonder how Joseph walked around with this robe thing that he had. He must have wore it all the time because we find it's with him later in the story. No, I'm sure he was very proud. I'm sure he was thankful his father gave him that. How do you think the brothers felt about that coat? It's not too hard to imagine, is it? Not too hard to imagine the attitude they had. And so we look at the next verse, verse 4 of chapter 37. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. Yeah, I bet it was a rather rough world that Joseph lived in. So, that sets the story for us as we start. Joseph's young. He's one of those guys who really doesn't have a real good clue about life at this point. He knows he's loved by his Father on earth, and he knows he's loved by his Father in heaven. He appears, and we see evident through the whole story, he has a walking relationship with his Father in heaven. Thankfully, because he will need it to sustain him. He's well aware of the one true God. So, the main part of our story begins, verse 5 of chapter 37. One night Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. "Listen to this dream," he said. "We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundle stood up, and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before me." His brothers responded, "So you think you'll be our king, do you? Do you actually think you will reign over us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. Now understand how ruthless these guys were. They were murderers. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. They were treacherous. There were a lot of them. They surrounded him. So remember I said Joseph was naive. I think he was very naive. Sometimes that can protect you. Usually not. But it also appears to me Jacob was naive as well. As we'll see. Joseph, 17, he just wants to show what's on his mind. "Man, I had this dream last night." I'm sure you do that sometimes. You had a dream and before you forget it, you want to tell somebody about it. He has, it appears, not a clue what his brothers think of him. How dangerous, literally dangerous, it is for him. But he's not done. You see, he has another dream. We go on to the next verse. I hope. There it is. Soon Joseph had another dream, and again he told his brothers about it. "Listen, I've had another dream," he said. "The sun, moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me." This time he told the dream to his father as well as to his brothers. But his father scolded him. "What kind of dream is that?" he asked. No, he didn't care about his brothers. His father was thinking of himself here. "Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground before you?" But while his brothers were jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dream meant. Now, we have hindsight. Those that know have read ahead, you know the story. We know what it means. Could you imagine what they thought about? That's just another one of those goofy things. Dreams. Another subject for a sermon. So shortly after this dream episode, Jacob sends all his sons, not Joseph, I'm sure not Benjamin, who was much younger, he sends them to take care of the sheep and goats, to graze. And he sends them to travel up north, quite a farther away. And I thought I'd show the dimensions. We have a map here that tells us about it. You can see Hebron, that's where they are. You can see the Dead Sea off to the right. That's definitely an arid area down in southern Israel there. And the grass burns off fairly quick. So now at the top of the Dead Sea, if you go left, you see a little purple plus mark there. That's Salem. Jerusalem isn't there as we know it as Jerusalem, but it's called Salem, is a Canaanite city. So Jacob sends his sons from down here in Hebron up to Shechem. Shechem's way up north. And why that's surprising to me, why he would send his sons anywhere up that area, I guess he figured given the number of them, given the size of their flocks, and they probably had some servants even beyond that traveling with them, they'd send him to Shechem. Because Shechem is where the sons of Jacob murdered all the men just a number of years before, not that long before. I would think it'd be a dangerous neighborhood, but when you murder all the men in a city, it takes quite a while to recover, so maybe they're okay. I'm sure the people of Shechem feared the brothers in that area. We'll come to see the brothers go up to Dothan. We'll talk about that just a little bit. I'm sure at a certain point, Jacob started wondering how they were doing. They were quite a ways away, and so he decided to send Joseph to check on them. That's what I mean when I said, I think Jacob's a little naive too. I don't think he understood how the brothers felt about the other son. So he sent someone he knew he could trust. Someone that had always just told it to him straight up what was going on. Someone he trusted totally, and that was Joseph. He sent Joseph up to check on him. Check on his investment more than the welfare of them. I'm sure he figured they'd take care of themselves. Now understand, they're pretty much adults, most of the brothers at this point. So the brothers head to Shechem, and Joseph gets up there and he can't find him. He's wandering around. And finally he comes across someone and said, oh, those guys, they all went over that way. And he pointed them on the way to Dothan. Now, Dothan's an important city. It doesn't show up here, but we're between Shechem and Dothan, going up kind of at a northwest angle, is a mountain range. Small mountain range compared to the Cascades, but still a mountain range. And there's three main passes that you can get through. Dothan is the first, the southernmost of the three passes you can go through. So it's on the international highway. The main trade route goes through Dothan. And those that know the story know that's going to play an important role in just a few moments here. So let's take a look at Genesis verses 18 through 20. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. His own brothers. Plans to kill him. Not good brothers. Here comes the dreamer, they said. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Is that it? Yep, it is. Sorry. The oldest brother, Reuben. You know, often the oldest brother tends to be very responsible, and that is the case here. Reuben wants to try to protect Joseph if he can. So quietly, he's doing things in the background to protect him. We continue with our story with verses 21, 22. But when Reuben heard of their scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. Let's not kill him, he said. Why should we shed any blood? Let's just throw him into this empty cistern here in the wilderness. Then he'll die without our laying hand on him. Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. Anybody want to guess why Reuben just didn't say, let's not kill him, let's just do this, punish him for a bit? My guess is Reuben was afraid of his brothers as well. He knew their history. He knew what they were capable of. We catch some of Reuben's heart in that passage. You see, anger started taking over these guys. This anger, this burst of emotion that we see from these brothers in these verses, where they want to do harm to their little brother, that didn't happen overnight. That was years in the making. Ever since this child was born, he was treated special. They were jealous. They were mad. They had all sorts of things building up. And what does anger do when it takes root? It will grow. It will take over a person's mind. Have you ever been angry to that point? Have you ever been so angry that it just almost consumes you? Woe to someone who loses control there. It's almost like these brothers become animals, wild beasts that are uncontrollable. So we see what happens starting with verse 23. It's quite a story. So when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe he was wearing. Then they grabbed him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. Then, just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels coming in the distance, coming toward them. It was a group of Ishmaelites, traders, taking a load of gum, balm, and aromatic resin from Gilead down to Egypt. Just a break here for a sec. Ishmaelites. Y'all have heard the name Ishmael. I want you to think about this. The linkage here is really fascinating. Abraham had a couple sons, Ishmael and Isaac. What happened to Ishmael? He essentially got thrown out of the household with his mom. Just a couple generations later, they're a group of people to be called the Ishmaelites, sons of Ishmael. So that means these guys were cousins of Joseph, not too distant cousins. Again, another fascinating thing. Verse 26, we pick up. Judah said to his brothers, What will we gain by killing our brother? His blood would just give us a guilty conscience. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to these Ishmaelite traitors. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. So when the Ishmaelites, who were Midianite traders, came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. And the traders took him to Egypt. Wow, what a story. I found it interesting, even though these brothers were so evil and harsh, that they knew what conscience was. They'd done some dastardly things. But guilt was a factor in their lives, which means they have a little bit of health left. I guess if they don't kill Joseph and they just send him to slavery for his whole life, they don't have the emotion of guilt crushing them. Guilt's a powerful thing. If you ever see it affecting people, if you ever feel it affecting you, you know what I'm talking about. It's like a cloud overtakes you. I remember as a kid, whenever I was caught doing something, my lower lip would... couldn't help myself. It would just do that every time. I couldn't hide at all. Guilt is a powerful thing. So I almost thought of showing you, it would take us off our train of thought here, the pictures from Facebook of the dogs that feel guilty. Ever see those videos? It's pretty funny. Go on to YouTube or something and write guilty dogs and you'll see hilarious examples of what is a very serious emotion. King David felt guilt, immensely so. We read about it in Psalm 51, verses 8 through 9. Let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones you have crushed rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out my iniquity. No, that was after a sin he was very guilty of. So, Reuben, back to our story now. Reuben is at a loss. How can he help his brother? He wanted to, but he couldn't. He wants to protect him some way. But peer pressure and fear would not let him. Most of that's not contained when we tell this story in Sunday school about the peer pressure and the fear that even Reuben would have felt. So, the scheming goes on because the brothers are also in the business of covering things up. Then the brothers killed a young goat and dipped Joseph's robe in its blood. Verse 32, they sent the beautiful robe to their father with this message. Look at what we found. Doesn't this robe belong to your son? I found this. They sent the robe. They didn't go themselves right away. They sent the robe to their father. Probably didn't want to face him right away. Plus, they had the sheep to take care of, right? What do you think Jacob did? He was heartbroken. This was his favorite child who had been violently killed. He could look at that robe and see there was nothing good that happened here. He went into grieving. Probably that he felt no end to that grieving. It would have been tough. He knew that robe well. There's not much sadder things than a parent losing a child. He was experiencing that. But we, of course, know Joseph was alive, very much alive. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about slavery and how traumatic it is in the last couple hundred years in our country. But back in that day, it was just part of everyday life. It was part of the economy. People didn't think that much different about slavery. What's amazing is where Joseph ends up. So the traders take him to Egypt. Genesis 37, 36. Meanwhile, the Mennonite traders arrived in Egypt where they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. You could say he was the head executioner. He had much, much power. And we know, because we know the story, it wasn't just a coincidence at all. You know, looking at what Joseph was experiencing, life can be filled with many adventures and journeys, often things we can't anticipate. Rough times are caused often by our own bad choices. We have to pay the results of our bad decisions. But sometimes it has nothing to do with our decisions. Some things just happen to us because we're part of a broken, fallen world. Other people sin, and that has ripple effects. I'm sure it was a total shock to a system. From dreams of greatness, you think of his dreams, to now lower than zero. Now he's a slave. What a contrast. It would jolt your system far more than a jump into a cold lake on a hot summer day. Have you ever experienced hard times coming on you? Things that you couldn't anticipate? You found yourself faced with frustration. You were literally in the pit. I'm sure we've all experienced that. I'm sure we've all experienced the hard times. And so I ask the question, what do you do when those times hit you in the face? When they smack you around? What do you do? Do you scream? Do you shout? Do you take your fist and smack it into a wall? I did that once. Hit the wall really hard, put a hole in it. I thought, that is the stupidest thing in the whole world. That really hurts. I'm never doing anything like that again. And I haven't. When you hit rough points in life, it's important we try to keep things in perspective. David, although he deserved, some would say, the results of his adulterous affair, his murder, and his cover-up. We read the following verses of what he said. He brought it on himself, different than Joseph, but he still had to deal with the reality. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. Then I will teach transgressors your way, so that sinners will turn back to you. Open my lips, Lord, and my mouth will declare your praise. You do not delight in sacrifice, or I would bring it. You do not take pleasure in burnt offerings. My sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit, a broken, contrite heart. David knew he had done wrong. He knew that he needed God's forgiveness. He had caused that problem in his case. And you might relate to him. We've all had the results of our sins kick back at us. You might relate to Joseph and experience the not so subtle benefits of being in a fallen, broken world. You know, I think of things that hit people, be it cancer, traffic accidents, crimes, things that ripple out and affect people around us. It's no wonder that Jesus Christ, before his death, cried tears of blood as he looked out over Jerusalem and thought of what was to come of all mankind. The tragedy of sin on the world and the waste of it all. It didn't have to be that way. Oftentimes I think of my friends that lost their 16-year-old daughter to violence. I talk about it on occasion. That's because I think about it on occasion. I met with her father just when we were back in the Washington area. In my heart, it just doesn't forget it. It's tragic. How do you deal with those hard, pressing times? We must pursue a close walk with God. We need that relationship with when tough times hit us. We have to have that. You know, the words of Scripture are comforting. But life can be so hard to deal with. We must keep God close during those times. We must draw up close to Him during those times. Here's the Apostle Paul. As he looks at things that happened to him, our last passage today, 2 Corinthians 4. It's actually selected verses. This is Paul, the Apostle Paul. We are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. Verse 17, yet they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. We fix our gaze on things that cannot be seen. For the things we see now will soon be gone, but the things we cannot see will last forever. Paul was keeping his perspective on the long term. He knew our lives here were short term. Paul had the perspective. You see, God wants to love and care for that. And often he reaches out through his word. He reaches out through his church, his people. He reaches out through family and friends to come alongside, to try to lessen the pain we experience. May we do our part to lessen the pain of others. May we let God's grace shine through each of us ever so brightly as we become upon people that struggle, as we struggle and need to find help around us. In future weeks, we will see how tight, how close that Joseph is to his Father in heaven. God is very close to Joseph. You belong to Jesus Christ yourself. You are close to your Father in heaven. May you never lose sight of the fact that he's always with you. Let me pray. Father, as we consider our day today, as we consider the tough things in life, I'm sure Joseph felt, well, it can't get any worse than this. It can only get better from here. He was to find out otherwise. Lord, you do allow us to experience testing. We sometimes don't have answers for the why. But we do have the answer that God is with us. He knows what we're going through. He works through the sins and the evil of this world for his glory, through miraculous ways sometimes. Help us never lose sight that we have a Father who is sovereign in control and will never leave us. In Jesus' name, amen.